Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Carrboro Board of Aldermen work session for Tuesday, September 11th, 2007. We do not, at our work sessions, ordinarily receive comments from the public. So we can proceed to our agenda. I would like to suggest before we get started that we take note of two things. I know, obviously, we're all aware that 6 years ago today was the September 11th, 2001 terrorist strike against the United States. And I'd like to ask the board to and all of us to have a moment of silence in remembrance of that. And I would also like to ask us to remember Sergeant Lee Wilson of Chapel Hill, who died this past Thursday in Iraq, serving his fourth tour of duty in Iraq. Mr. Wilson, who was a green card holder, an immigrant from Canada, signed up to join the United States Armed Services about 5 years ago. Begin our meeting tonight with a continued discussion of the Alberta mixed-use building, conditional use rezoning, and conditional use permit application. Mr. Manager, does the staff have any further presentation on this matter?
I don't believe so. Marty, anything you need to add at this point?
I don't believe
so. Okay. Just to recap, we basically where we left off at our last meeting was the board identified some key conditions that were important to the board in order to carry out the rezoning and the issuance of the permit. Would anybody on behalf of the developer like to speak real quick? Come on up, Nate. You don't need to be sworn at this point. We're not in the public hearing anymore.
Okay. Nathan Millian here on behalf of the developer. Just want to tell you that I think that we have come to agreement on all of the terms of the that you guys had talked about. Mr. Greenberg had just wanted to see it in writing, so because you know we were kind of batting around the ideas, so he wanted to see the final draft. That's been done. I think we're all ready to go. So the developer's in agreement. If you're inclined to vote on it tonight.
I just had one question that can either be staff or Nathan. The driveway from Carr to Sweet Bay, that's going to be a driveway, so it's not a public road, but it's not going to be gated either, is it?
Not according to the agreement that we've had.
Okay.
That's one of the,
okay.
That's one of the conditions.
Conditions.
Okay. One of the final conditions.
Great.
Of the agreement.
Just clarifying. Thank you.
All right. Is there a motion then?
Yep. I'll move. Well, I guess we're back into procedure. So as a matter of nailing down the conditions, I'll just move conditions 1 through 20, which has consolidated the conditions that were agreed upon last week by the board and agreed to by Nathan and his clients.
So that incorporates public sidewalk arrangements.
Yes, and that's been consolidated in
okay.
The summary sheet that in the
okay.
latest summary sheet that's been presented.
Okay. I'll second.
It's been moved and seconded that what is the motion?
That the board has come to a consensus on these conditions.
Oh, okay.
And then we're going to have to go through the process as Mike has determined.
Yes, we probably should do the minor modification first, and then the zoning, and then the permit.
Okay, but without that necessarily being a motion, then why don't we go ahead and do
all right,
that?
Well, let's just characterize that this way. Is there any dissent at this point on the board from the consolidated list?
It's not a dissent. It's a clarification.
Take one
the The one that deals with leaving the landscape buffer as is, as it is, I'd like to have put in there that it will be replaced with a comparable buffer if it dies.
During the construction?
No, because I think those are the bushes that are kind of not...
Not doing that well.
They're not doing that well, and they could have a blight. So if we could just add, will be replaced with a comparable landscape buffer if they should die.
Could the staff address that for a second? So is the landscaping buffer? I mean,
I think we have to.
If it's a required buffer and your buffer dies, you have to replant it.
You have to replace it anyway.
That's the ordinance that normally requires that.
Okay.
That's the case.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
So that's incorporated into this the set of requirements we have here.
Okay.
All right. But it's a great point. It's
okay.
Definitely a great point.
So we'll start with a minor modification, right?
Okay. Mm-hmm.
We're gonna move to the minor modification.
Yeah, and then we'll do the rezoning, and then we'll do the conditions.
Okay.
So I'll just go ahead and move the resolution and attachment A approving the minor modification.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded that we grant the minor modification for the conditional use permit for Carmel Mall.
I want to be sure with some of the lights, we had stipulated that the lights that were closer to houses could not be higher than 15 feet. We had spoken about that last week.
I think where we wound up in that discussion last week was that the applicant agreed to not as a condition of this permit, but agreed to voluntarily look into the question of how those lights could be hooded, that they would work
and
installed
full cutoff.
Because I mean, there's
fixtures.
some affecting Sweet Bay and some affecting Carr. So if that doesn't happen, the neighbors can come back to the board and say that's not happening?
No, I think where we wound up last time was that that Mr. Greenberg and his associates agreed to use their good faith efforts to do something about that, but it was not going to be a condition of this permit. So it was not going to be something that we would have any ability to come back and force them to do something about, if you see what I'm saying. That's... The developer is nodding. That's his understanding of it as well.
Well, is there any way we could make that stronger?
I guess, it's a question of, I mean, hypothetically, we could, if the board was interested, we could add that to the list and ask the developer to agree to it. I don't know whether they would or not, but.
Since he said that they're going to do it anyway.
Well, he didn't guarantee that they would do it, and I think part of the reason that was cited was because Duke Power, because the light fixtures are owned by Duke Power. Is that right? Because the light fixtures are owned by Duke Power, so they're not. It's not as simple as that. They're his light fixtures changed. If you see what I'm saying,
they have to make a request to Duke Power, and Duke Power. I mean, Duke Power typically honors the requests, but
at least can we say that they will request Duke Power to make the changes? Can we have that included?
That
the request will be made.
Nathan's nodding. So where do you want to put it?
Well, you could add it as condition 21 that they will request it from Duke Power.
That sounds just fine.
That doesn't amount to a guarantee by the developer about what Duke Power's response will be.
Right, but it does.
How about this
require them to ask.
Applicant will request installation of full cutoff fixtures from Duke Power or other light pollution mitigating devices.
Okay.
You good to go with that, Nate?
Okay.
All right. We have it in the record. He is
all right. So that's
nodding and saying yes.
I'm accepting that as a friendly amendment.
Okay. All right. So now, but that's actually not especially relevant to the motion, which is the for the.
Yeah, but that takes care of it in the later action.
It's fine. I'm not objecting to the discussion. I'm just saying we're back on the question of minor modification.
Right. But that'll be taken care of in conditions when we get to it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, the motion on the modification stands.
All right. Any further discussion? All those in favor of the minor modification signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? The matter passes unanimously.
The next thing we've got to do is the map amendment. So we start with the resolution adopting a statement explaining the Board of Aldermen's reasons for adopting the amendment to the map of the Carver Land Use Ordinance in Attachment A1. So moved.
Second that.
It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 And now
those opposed, the matter passing. Yeah,
sorry about that. Saw all those hands jumping, and I just decided to drive right on
through.
Just got
to ask, make sure.
Okay, so now we will move the ordinance amending the Carver zoning map as outlined in Attachment B1.
Second.
All right. It's been moved and seconded that we change the zoning map. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed?
Now we get ready to wrap this thing up. So I'll move that the application is complete.
Second.
We're going to vote on those each of those
Yeah, we got to go through.
So all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, the matter passed unanimously.
I move that the application is in compliance with the land use ordinance.
Second.
Been moved and seconded. It's in compliance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, the matter passed unanimously.
I move under number three, the finding A, that the board finds that the proposed use will not substantially injure the value of adjoining or abutting property.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded that it does not injure the values. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Move 3B.
Matter passed unanimously. 3B has been moved.
Yeah.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? Matter passed unanimously.
Move 3C.
Second.
3C has been moved. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed.
Okay, we've already discussed the conditions, so I'll move that the application is granted subject to conditions 1 through now 21 as agreed to.
Second.
All right. It's been moved and seconded that we...
That the application is granted subject
the
to conditions
1 through 21.
Is
someone taking notes on how he does this? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed, matter of fact.
I could tell us the last time, we'd be glad to come back $200 an hour. Okay. That's called consulting fees, boys and girls.
All right.
Congratulations, guys. It's a nice project.
Good luck. All right. Mr. Manager, I believe that takes us to item 3 on our agenda.
This is a discussion of options for incentivizing the provisions of space for daycare facilities. The board at its June 26, 2007 public hearing adopted amendments to the land use ordinance to revise several restrictions on child daycare homes and facilities. In the course of that discussion, the board asked staff to explore options for incentivizing the creation of space for daycare facilities in new developments, and this item responds to that request. And our planning administrator has a presentation to go over some of the options that might be available for the board to consider.
Trish.
Thank you. Good evening, everyone. This item is a follow-up to your action in June, and we have explored some of the ideas that were noted at the public hearing in June about incentives to provide daycare spaces in new developments, and we've done that by looking at incentive programs in other communities. The staff looked at 7 communities around the country that have various types of public incentives incorporated into their land use planning and regulations, and we also polled local developers and commercial realtors to sort of test some of the ideas about what incentives might be attractive to them. The daycare incentives that we identified in other communities were 5 different items. They're noted here and in your packet, and they include density bonuses, that is, increases in residential density, intensity bonuses, changes in building height, floor area, and reductions in building setbacks, reductions in parking requirements, waivers of fees, and the expedited review of development applications. We did want to note that there are a number of variables that affect the provision of daycare spaces or the need for it. Of course, there are market conditions and there are changes in the demography, you know, the demographics of a community. These conditions would determine the need of this particular service and then can affect the prices of the spaces that could be used for that use. There are, of course, state regulations that apply, and these change over time. They do affect the physical requirements and can change whether a space that's been sort of planned for this use would continue to be appropriate for that use. And then, so as a result of that, we wanted to just note that it's, you know, we felt it would be important to be as flexible as possible in creating any incentives because there are many, because of these conditions that fluctuate beyond the town's control. What other communities are doing to try and ensure the continued use of daycare spaces are placing restrictions on building uses and building spaces. And so a couple of the examples we found are requiring daycare uses in given buildings based on some other trade-off incentives, or in a particular case in Georgia, the space remains vacant, that there are time limitations on the use, that it has to be restricted for daycare use for a minimum of 20 years out in Seattle. And Greensboro has a requirement for reserving space for nonprofit use, not only daycare, but that is one of the types of uses included. In looking to the development community, we basically asked them what would inspire them to provide daycare spaces. What are the kinds of things that they felt would be legitimate trade-offs for doing this? And they provided some information on this. To this inquiry. In residential and mixed-use developments, they've suggested substituting the daycare for our request for affordable housing. They've been interested in the increases in density or density bonuses for this use, and also are interested in reductions in open space when daycare uses are placed in those areas in combination with one of the other incentives. In all types of development, not just mixed use or residential, they were interested in increases in building intensity, both building height, not floor area particularly here because we don't use that idea that specifically, but reductions in setbacks and additional lots to be used for their development. So just a basic increase in intensity of use. They're interested in decreased parking requirements, particularly allowing on-street parking to count towards the parking needs for this use, and so a reduction in on-site parking, and then waiving or reducing fees in combination with one of the other trade-offs. We did receive some other feedback and regarding some of the ideas that were discussed, and there were some perceived limitations to or barriers to really co-locating daycares in clubhouses or other community spaces just because of the given the state regulations regarding the materials and supplies and equipment that are needed for daycares to operate. For non-residential areas, the rent, the cost of those commercial spaces seemed to be so high that it didn't seem to be a use that they could daycare didn't seem to be a use that could be traded off. And they noted that, you know, currently what folks seem to do more commonly is to operate in a home, which is going to be used as a home primarily, or they operate in a church. And again, it's sort of a demand management, you know, approach rather than spaces that are dedicated for this use. They did suggest that the town's economic development staff could maintain a list of prospective daycare operators that we could always provide to any developers so that they could seek if there was a way in designing their project to incorporate it into the design, they could have it on hand. There was a perception that expedited review was not a great and would not be a great incentive, would not really work. there are public benefits incentive programs used around the country for all kinds of things other than daycare. Of course, affordable housing actually is one of the other big uses for which communities try to create incentives. But they also are things like open space, public art, performing arts, and a number of other things. We identified a couple of pros and cons associated with expanding the scope of this project, and one of the things that's noted in your report is the idea of linking this compiling or partnering a public incentives program together rather than having them stand alone, so that then there would be some prioritization or scoring that the town would develop based on the different levels of appropriateness of these different activities within different types of developments. So just noted the pro and con associated with expanding the scope. Obviously, one of the pros of a comprehensive approach is that we do get to do what I've just described, and that then we can consistently talk about public benefits in various types of developments. And then the con is the length of time and complexity of doing that and of implementing a program like that. So we've identified a couple of, although this is a work session, we did identify a couple of things that you might direct us to do this evening in addition to just discussing these ideas further, and that is to, you know, to go forward with the changes that you've recently adopted, to request that we work on developing these ideas further for incentives for daycares based on the feedback we've obtained, or look at a broader program, a comprehensive approach to public incentives. Thanks.
This is just a real simple question. We are talking both senior and child daycare, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Trish, is it generally believed that clubhouses, when neighborhoods have clubhouses, that they're not used during the weekday, like during working hours, Monday to Friday? Or?
Is it generally believed?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of this number two, where it was looking at daycare space within a clubhouse or community center, you know, that.
And if there, I would
that,
say.
That, it, to me, that sort of seems to be implicit in that.
Let me just read it again so I know exactly. I would say it varies depending on the time of year, but
so I guess what I'm asking is if we have a sense of whether having daycare in a clubhouse, let's say it was designed appropriately,
mm-hmm.
Is the extent to which that would interfere with the neighborhood's enjoyment of the clubhouse facility under normal conditions.
That's going to complete. Pardon me if I was speaking too quickly. That's going to depend on how it's designed. It's, you know, for one, retrofitting, I think it would be more problematic,
mm-hmm.
and it's perhaps unlikely that we would be in a conversation with an existing development about seeking to install a daycare in one of their in a clubhouse or community center, but I think it's a matter of how it's designed and, you know, making sure that there is sufficient parking and so forth. Certainly in the summertime, if there's a pool or something like that, there could be conflicts if it wasn't designed appropriately, because there would be parking issues and there'd be a whole lot more activity,
mm-hmm.
then. And, you know, they're used pretty I don't live in a development that has one, but my anecdotal observations of them in the community is that they're used for birthday parties and all kinds of things, you know, from Friday evening, certainly through Sunday evening. And but during the summer, they're used much more extensively if there's any kind of recreation facilities. And so.
Thanks.
And brought it really into the spring and fall, if it's like tennis courts and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I like in our discussion, I'd like the board to think about what kind of daycares do we want to be in Carver. And what do the demographics show us? Because we know there's a need, but the question is there a need for quality daycare at a reasonable price? Because we could have incentives that, for example, they could produce for-profit daycares, and I'm thinking of, oh, God, what are they called? It starts with a P, and I can't think of their name. But they are a large corporate organization that has, you know, large daycares. And
Petite Academy or something.
High school with a
K. No. It starts with a P. I can't remember what it is. But they're like a franchise. And so the question is that what we want? Or do we want to encourage, for example, nonprofits to be in that daycare space? Or do we want to encourage a mix of entrepreneurs and nonprofits to provide the child care that we need? Because that's a different discussion about. And, you know, and I mean, if we're going to provide incentives, I think we should provide incentives for what we want and what we don't want. Now, you know, I'm not against for-profit daycares, but again.
And of course, I realize it's not what you're talking about, but for part of the problem becomes that, for example, that, you know, a lot of the small in-home daycare operators obviously are, from a tax point of view, quote unquote, for profit.
Right.
Not that they make lots of money.
No.
But and that's, you know, obviously not the kind of thing you're talking about.
Mm-mm.
But just to point out how difficult it is to draw out what that distinction really is. But I agree with you, your point.
And you know, the other thing is that this just could be because this is how I am. I don't think we should trade affordable housing for daycare. I mean, I know that's one of the things that some places do. But I would encourage us not to do that, given the great need of affordable housing. So,
Jackie.
I don't think we're going to solve this tonight. And I know that staff is under a great deal of stress right now, has plenty of work on their plate. I'd like us to throw some ideas around tonight and then kind of say, you know, 5 months from now, 4 months from now, when staff's has time to come back and give us some ideas for operationalizing what we've come up with, that might be a good approach. I don't really care if it's private or public or nonprofit, but I would like to, if a daycare center is built using any of our incentives, except the added height, which I won't vote for, using any of our incentives, that they have to, in some shape or form, be participating in the sliding scale programs and working with child care networks to provide, you know, because I wouldn't want to see a new development of high-end houses come in and only high-end children have the ability to take advantage of that daycare center. So
right.
That's one of kind of the caveats I'd like built into whatever we end up with.
Yeah,
that's a good point.
That is a good point. And I guess actually that would be one way to begin to address the question is just that because not all preschools do accept vouchers from the Smart Start program
or
the Mort 4 program from the state because the state's program doesn't pay quite as much as private tuition rates currently do
kinda
in
like
our community
Medicare.
On average.
Yeah.
Well, exactly. But so I guess potentially if we do come up with an incentive package, mm-hmm. that could be one of the requirements. I think another thing is that for facilities that are subject to licensing by the state, that we could also look at sort of what, you know, they have a 1 through 5 star system, and so you know there could be a requirement that, and I don't know much about that system, but that only you know 4-star and above programs would qualify, or you know that could be somehow a condition of their participation in an incentive program.
That's what I'm kind of not exactly clear about because this sort of direction discussion because the staff report really focuses on how we get developers to create space where daycare could operate. But the developers aren't going to operate the daycare, and I don't believe we can write into their CUP that a daycare operator has to be found, or, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but, and certainly what we're seeing in the research is that in many cases the daycare space remains unutilized. And so I'm not clear, like, where we're going. We're talking about these conditions in this context, you know, that there might be another discussion about how we can influence the kinds of daycares that get established in Carrboro generally, but is that a different discussion from how we get developers to create usable space?
For let me address that, because I think it depends on how you approach the problem, and I would put it this way, for example, that I think Seattle was cited as one place where they had this requirement that if you, if you signed on to this program and so forth and developed some daycare space or preschool space, that it had to be used for that purpose for 20 years or sit vacant if there was no one to occupy it. Now, first of all, obviously we don't necessarily have to approach it the same way that Seattle did, but for example, you could imagine a scenario where a developer might come with already having essentially partnered with the operator that was to be in there, or partnered with the organization that was to move into the space, and saying, well, we're gonna as soon as this is built, we're gonna sign a 15-year lease, or we've already signed a 15-year lease that's conditioned on the Carrboro Board of Aldermen approving it. Mm-hmm. And so we already know what type of operator it is, or we already know what the do you see what I'm saying? Uh-huh. So I think how you do that depends on what exactly the requirements ought to be, or just how you approach the problem in general.
And is your sense, having been on the child care committee and all, that there are people ready to start daycare who are in a position to sign those kind of leases?
Let me say, it's actually far worse than that. The problem is far worse than that there are people who are ready to start them and have no place to do so. Mm-hmm. It's, in fact, more that, for example, the Family Preschool Cooperative, which is in Chapel Hill, but a lot of Carrboro kids go there.
At Aldersgate?
Yeah. I don't want to pick on the landlord, but has been in operation for, I don't know how long, 15, maybe 20 years now, and their landlord has said, you need to move on. This is going to be their last year of operation in their current digs, and they are desperately searching around for a place to move this really fantastic program to, and cannot find it. They can't find it in Chapel Hill. They can't find it in Carrboro. They can't find it in Orange County. They're having a hard time finding it anywhere remotely nearby in Chatham County. I think they will manage to find a way. There's a very determined group of people who run that preschool, and there are some very committed parents involved, and they will find a way to work the problem out. But if we, under a different set of circumstances, had, for example, this conversation, like 5 years ago, and I'm not being critical of the fact that we didn't, but had we been having this conversation 5 years ago and have already done what we're now thinking about, they might have been able to come with the developer of one of these developments that has been coming through our system with a proposal to incorporate them into it. They've looked at actually trying to come and request us to grant some type of modification to a permit for an already approved development, with the idea of going into a development that's currently under construction. The other thing I'll say is, from what I understand, they are not the only. They're only notable because they're in the most immediate crisis, but that is by no means the only example of where that is. The writing is on the wall, I guess is what I'm saying, with respect to some other preschools and daycares in our community.
And to follow up on that, looking at the third bullet on B3, which refers to the high rents and where daycare operators are more likely to go, let's say that the mixed-use development we contemplate perhaps on Homestead Road or northward somewhere comes into being, would we expect that rents would be appropriate for something like the group you're talking about?
I think that would have to be, well, f-
first of all, let me say, from what I understand from the folks at Family Preschool, it is not as simple as a question of their being able to afford to pay, but that literally they're having a hard time finding a site.
Uh-huh.
Because both there are commercial and residential landlords out there who are not willing to consider leasing to them because of some kind of, I guess, perception that this is somehow a disruptive use as opposed to a natural part of any, municipal landscape. But anyway, which I know we don't need to debate that point, but so affordability of rents is sort of one issue, but just the availability of appropriate spaces, the existence of appropriate spaces is a serious issue as well. And I guess another point I would make is, what is the name of the one that moved to Southern Village? Chapel Hill Daycare.
Cooperative, wasn't it called?
I don't know.
Chapel Hill Daycare.
There was one organization that moved out of one of the churches in Chapel Hill, in downtown Chapel Hill, and into a brand new building in Meadowmont. They bought the land and built their own building. Obviously it's still a question of what that costs, but again, this is really my point is, I think Family Preschool has looked at that option, of buying space and building something and can't find anywhere to do that either.
Well, it might be a good idea to use their situation as a model and to just kind of systematically look at what are their roadblocks and which of those roadblocks could an ordinance help to lift.
I just have one more thought about this whole. I think that's a good suggestion. I have one more observation about this, which is I'm kind of torn by Joel's point. I don't either entirely agree or entirely disagree about the question of how this relate, whether any kind of incentive ought to relate to the affordable housing incentives that we already have in Carrboro. But I do just want to point out that. Especially if we get at the affordability issue, both the affordability issue that Dan was talking about and the ones that y'all were talking about in our incentive program, that if the existence of an additional daycare is adding in a really meaningful way to the affordability of living in this community, if it's if it makes a meaningful contribution to the cost. Toward controlling the cost of living for low and moderate income families in our community, then I guess I'd be willing to consider the point. For example, and they're not in danger of losing their space at all, as far as I know, nothing like it. But for example, an organization like the Community School for People Under Six is serves primarily, I don't know, maybe exclusively. Families that make below 80% of the area median income. That organization is doing a lot to contribute to affordable housing in our community, if you want to look at it that way. Right. You know what I mean? Not that they provide housing, but in other words, if you can afford housing but not preschool for your children, then it's not very meaningful if you can only afford one or the other. I guess that's what I'm trying to say.
Cool.
So. But in order to be willing to consider that kind of trade-off, I think it would have to be pretty narrowly drawn to ensure that there really is that level of connection between cost of living for low and moderate income families. Anyway, so that's just my thought about it.
Another thought I have is to, and I know we already do it, but it would be good to focus it or find out more about local business entrepreneurs that start these kind of businesses. And I know working for a non-for-profit that has financed several of those child care centers, especially bilingual ones, a lot of these people, they're local-owned businesses, small entrepreneurs who put everything they got in the line, and still they have to modify houses and they have to do additional stuff. And it's not just a low interest loan, but if we can redirect some of the money that we have from revolving fund or look for ways that we can lower the cost of these people to be up in business in our community, it will be extremely helpful to promote local ownership of these daycare facilities, and at the same time, you know, put our money to focus it in that way to attract the kind of child care that we want in our community.
That's a great point. I think I'm aware that there's been at least one case where the board, y'all, I think, were on mm-hmm. the board at the time, where the board did approve a loan to a mm-hmm. preschool to help create jobs in downtown Carrboro. That's one of the resources, certainly, that we can work with.
Do we need to move this resolution?
I think I really agreed with what Jackie said earlier about where we ought to head with this in terms of allocating staff time, that it sounds like it's something that the board is interested in. But I think that we are very much aware that our planning staff is working hard on a whole lot of other projects right now. We appreciate all of the work that our planning and development review staff do for us. I know I truly speak for the entire board when I say that. So I think we want to explore this further, but I think we want the staff to prioritize it appropriately and recognize that there are a bunch of other things that we've already put on the list that are ahead of this.
I'm wondering if it might be workable to pull this back in when we get to some specificity on any updates to the northern small area plan, that, you know, we're going to be looking at some changes there that hopefully would accommodate some of this, and that might be a time when we could take up this discussion again and see if we can agree upon a direction. And that might be the number of months away that Jackie's describing.
Trish, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think this is actually a topic that at some level has been discussed in that committee. Isn't
well,
it?
It's you all did refer this to the review committee.
This is one, but
and they haven't felt like they're ready to discuss it yet because they haven't gotten down to some, you know, more specific recommendations. But so we brought it to you because we wanted to, you know, share some information with you, and since Kendall's leaving, we wanted to give you the results of her efforts to date. Yes, and so we can certainly bring it back to the review committee and ask them to, you know, to provide feedback about how they think it might be.
I don't think I'm suggesting that the review committee look at it. I'm suggesting that.
Oh,
I mean,
okay.
That, I'm not saying that's inappropriate, but I'm suggesting that when we look at, you know, we'll get something from the review committee, and then we're going to start looking at ordinances and what kind of changes we want to implement.
It's already been referred. Is
yes.
That correct? I mean, it's on their list to do. They just haven't gotten to it yet.
They have received a slightly different version of this information.
Right.
So they'll get to bring it to you with some comments, but they really aren't ready yet to talk about it.
We have several, both commercial and residential projects coming before us in the remainder of this year, and I'd like us board members to kind of keep in the front of our minds that as we're talking to these folks, we can bring up, you know, any chance for daycare in here. You want to do some bargaining talk about daycare here. You know, even in a commercial development, there are nice daycare centers in commercial developments if you do it right. So even as we're waiting for staff's plate to clear, let's us not forget about it when we're having these conversations over the next several months.
That's a good point, because I think a case in point is in Alberta, you know, they have that one apartment on the mm-hmm. first floor, that could potentially have been an ideal location to say,
yeah,
you know, let's put it in.
We're very small, yeah, very small operation could work over there. All right. Is that have we been adequately clear about how we want to proceed with this?
You okay, sir?
I think you've given us several, you know, points to think about, and
okay,
you know, what things we can work with.
Okay.
Sure.
Is that concludes our agenda, and because it's a work session, it doesn't call for me to actually recognize any of y'all as to whether you want to bring up anything separately. So
I had something.
I could just hammer the gavel down
right
here at 8:14, but
yeah. But I will very quickly, because you know, we moved the Art Commission kind of from an independent entity to Recreation and Parks, and change can sometimes bring some friction with it. And one of the things that happened, or the main thing that happened, was as the Art Commission kind of needed to start working by the same guidelines as our other commissions, they hadn't been doing that, so there were some issues before you. And we had this great meeting last night, and I told them I'd come to you and see if you all would help. We need, and I'm bringing it to you so that I can formally refer it to staff, we need to reword the charge so that it's easier for them to, A, have a quorum, or, B, vote on things without a quorum. What they were thinking was that if there were at least 5 members present, then the majority of those present could vote on things that didn't have to do with allocation of funds. You know, what they find frustrating is 3 or 4 will come to a meeting and they can't vote on using the money they already have, or they can't vote on which artists they're going to hang or things like that. So that's one thing that needs to be worked on. Need to change it to make it possible and easier for the committee to participate in community collaborative events such as the mural painting. The way that the committee's charge is now written, it says that they will provide volunteers to hang every show. After 10 years, that has burnt them out because it takes like 8 hours to hang a show. So to come up with some other ways, you know, maybe not being as particular about how the show is hung, but part of that is protecting our own walls. They are beginning to look at seeing if they can get an art history intern, so that's one thing. The committee thought that it had made a $500 contribution to the Chapel Hill Carborough Community Art Project, and their resolution did not carry because there was not a quorum. They were put in the embarrassing situation of having told, you know, we've participated in the community art project, which is the one that did, like, the portraits and the stories and all kinds of really neat stuff. Whoops, we can't give you the $500. We didn't have enough people there. We need to fix that. And we need to fix that soon. Coming up with ways to help the committee take donations. We're already coming up with those so that right now they're trying. There's an organization that takes care of children who have AIDS, orphan children who have AIDS in South Africa. And there's an organization that sells those paintings, takes donations for the children's art to support the children. It's a really neat. It's called Emma's something. So we think we've come up with some mechanisms where the Emma organization's people can be at the shows, and they will take the money. That we won't touch the money. So looking at things like that. But originally they've been told, no, you can't raise money for anybody. And that's basically it. I promised them that I would formally present this to you so we could present it to staff. In the minutes from last night's meeting, there should be information on how far we've already gotten with working through some of these.
So is that a motion that you're making? Or
I move that we refer my list formally to staff for review and comment.
Second.
Well, I just want to add to that, Jackie, that I really appreciate the level of involvement that you've personally put into helping to try and deal with this, and I hope the staff can find a way to accommodate as much of this as possible.
Can't have a creative economy without artists.
Or somebody creative, at least.
Question, I don't know what we're referring, but you want to, is this the Arts Committee plus any other committee? I mean, we want uniformity.
No, this is the Art Committee.
Well, I think there's some specific issues to the Art Committee, and at this point all we're being asked is to vote on whether we're on whether to refer these issues to the staff for them to come report back to us about what
to make their transition
what
smoother.
What we can do along these lines or what we can do to implement some of these ideas.
And we've already looked at I think really all of these, so
right.
I think we can come back in fairly short order with some ideas about how to do it.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Call the question.
All right. All those in favor of referring this sort of petition from Jackie to the staff, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, matter passing unanimously.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jackie.
Thank you.
Okay.
To adjourn. May we adjourn?
Second.
All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, matter passing unanimously.
I don't have